Welcome to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Rob Brovich in the studio today. Gary Bell's out of town. Welcome to our show. We're here to talk to you about any legal topic you'd like to talk about. If we can't give you an answer to whatever might be your legal question, we will look it up. We'll find a way to answer it. We'll get somebody to call you during the week to discuss it with you. If you need more in-depth discussion about what your problem might be, we're happy to have somebody call you during the week. In our lawyer lives, in our regular lawyer lives, we're personal injury lawyers. We handle cases for people who've been injured in any activity that might result in an injury to them. If it's a car accident, if it's slip and fall, if it's a recreational activity, if it's an on-the-job injury, we will help you with that case. We'll give you a legal game plan. We'll represent you. We've been doing this since 1985. We're happy to help you and help you get through your problems and get you fair compensation. But during this show, we have lines open. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. And if you're in Steamboat Springs, you can call us at 970-457-1009. In this show, we talk about any topic. We'll try and figure out what the problem is and get you on the right track. Rob, how are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you aboard. Rob's been with us since, how long have you been with us?
1996.
So he's been with us for quite a while. It's been a pleasure having him with us. Rob, you do a lot of work. You don't specialize. Well, I don't know if you specialize or not, but you do a lot of work in the work comp area.
I do. About 50-50 work comp and then car crash cases.
And you know, when you get to workers' compensation, that preempts your personal injury cases.
It does. When if you're injured on the job, and let's just use an example, if you're involved in a car crash and you're on the job, you can either go through the at-fault party's insurance carrier, or you can file with the work comp carrier. It's up to you. Most people will go through the work comp carrier because you're automatically entitled to benefits, and the work comp carrier will immediately start paying for your medical treatment. If you miss time from work, they're going to immediately start paying your wage loss benefits.
Now, what if you don't like your doctor in work comp?
Nowadays you can change your doctor within 90 days from the date of injury, so long as you have not been put at maximum medical improvement. So you can request to change your doctor, and once you inform your employer that you've been injured, they have to give you a list of doctors that you can choose from. And I would say to everyone out there that once that list is handed to you, if you're injured on the job, that's when you need to contact an attorney. There's not a million doctors in Colorado that do work comp. There's a handful, and we're all familiar with them, and we can guide you and tell you which doctor that we think will give you the best treatment, and we'll give you other information too. And it's a free consultation, so you have nothing to lose by contacting us once you're injured on the job.
So initially, the employer picks your doctor.
Initially, they give you a list, and you get to choose which doctor you want from that list. And the number of doctors on that list varies depending upon the population in your community. If you're in a rural area, the list is a little bit shorter. But in Denver, Colorado, you will get a list from your employer. You get to choose which doctor you want to treat with. And then if you don't like that doctor that you choose, you can also request a change of physician.
303-713-8255. We're the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Give us a call if you have any legal questions about any legal topic, any legal matter you have going on. If you need some advice, if you need some information, feel free to give us a call. That's 303-713-8255. Rob, when we're talking about the doctors and we're talking about in work comp, when we want to change doctors, do we have to have a reason? Do we have to say the doctor did something wrong? What do we do?
Absolutely not. You can do it within the first 90 days, and that is just simply telling the adjuster that's handling your claim that you would like a change of physician. And then you can also request it, and if they don't respond to your request or if they don't deny your request, you can change the physician in that way as well anytime during your claim.
When I do the change of physician, do I get to pick another doctor then, or do they pick one for me?
When you request a change of physician, it's going to be another doctor on that particular list. If that's one way of doing it, that's the automatic change. And then if you you can request a different doctor at any time. 9 times out of 10, they'll deny the request. And then in that situation, you can't change the physician. But you have different, you always, for the most part, have two different avenues to take when you're requesting a change of physician. It's very, very much less complicated to change your doctor nowadays than it was when I first started in the work comp area.
But the bottom line is, if I've got my primary care physician through somebody like, a Blue Cross Blue Shield for my health insurance, and I want to go to that primary care physician for my on-the-job injury, unless that physician's on the list, I'm not going to be able to go.
For the most part, that's true. And I understand that people are more comfortable with their primary care physician when they're getting treated, but in the work comp realm, there's certain things that these work comp doctors are trained to do. They take a weekend course to be level 2 accredited, and they know about the fee schedule. They know about how much treatment should be administered before the work comp care is going to stop providing payment. And they also know how to give impairment ratings and determine if someone is at maximum medical improvement.
And when we talk about impairment rating, what do we mean by an impairment rating?
Well, what a work comp doctor will do is, once you've reached that point where it's called maximum medical improvement, which basically means you're as good as you're going to get. Not that you're back to 100%, but you're as good as you're going to get. What they'll do is they have a instrument that they use to check your range of motion, and then that's part of your impairment rating. And then the next part of your impairment rating is you get so much of a percentage based upon your particular disorder or injury.
And does that make a difference? Does that mean money, or what's that mean?
That is exactly right. That does mean money. The higher the rating, the more money you're going to receive. And it's kind of tricky when you're trying to determine how much money you're going to receive. If it's basically a whole person impairment rating, which means you've injured your neck or your back, you consider your percentage of disability that the doctor determines that you're impaired, and then you consider your average weekly wage. And then there's also an age factor that they use to determine how much money you're going to receive. So if you're a high wage earner, you get a high impairment rating, and you're young, you're going to be entitled to more money.
And this is all spelled out in statute.
It is all spelled out, but it can be confusing. It's very, very technical. You're going to need an attorney that has a few years under his belt to really understand this. Come to us. We'll explain it to you fully. It's a free consultation, so why not?
Well, it sounds like something that you want to make sure you follow up on, because from the very beginning, when you're figuring out that average weekly wage and you're figuring out who your doctor is, those are the beginning steps, but they're the most important steps.
Very true. Very true. There's no reason not to contact us, and we'll help you out and to make sure that you're getting the most you possibly can as a result of your work comp claim.
You listen to the Bell and Paul Legal Show, 303-713-8255. Lines are open, 970-457-1009 in Steamboat Springs. If you've got any legal questions, legal comments, legal things you want to talk about, give us a call, 303-713-8255. We'll be right back. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Rob Brovage in studio, here to talk to you about your legal questions, your legal matters. We're going to go straight to the phones. We have Steve. Steve, you have a motorcycle question.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you for taking
morning.
My call.
What can we do for you?
I wonder about these motorcycles. They make those ferocious noises. And driving in the middle of the night, middle of afternoon, 7 days a week, 24-hour day. Is there any rule about that? Is it about noise limits?
Well, you know, Steve, it's funny you bring that up, because there are noise ordinances that are in different cities and different that are in municipalities that need to be followed. And the noise ordinances can result in a motorcycle being pulled over, as can a car. They can have if it's too loud, it can be pulled over for being too loud. Now, if you talk to a number of people that ride motorcycles and are involved in motorcycles and build them and the manufacturers, they talk about the fact that, first of all, they get upset that the motorcycle noise should not be equated with the speed of the motorcycle. They say quite often the motorcycle would be loud, but yet it may not be going very fast. They do have, and they could be loud. Some people prefer to have a motorcycle that's noisy, believe it or not, because it calls attention to the fact they're there, and they don't want to be faced with a situation where they're not seen, they're not noticed, and they get run over, they get hit, they get run off the road, and they have a problem with not being seen. You've got, just like in every walk of life, you got responsible people riding motorcycles and you got irresponsible people.
But the local police department don't do nothing, as far as I can tell. And then they have this special muffler that puts these on these souped up small cars. I don't know what kind of car, but they must have a huge engine in it. And they're just zipping a week ago. It's down on East Hamden, it's two cars just going, I guess they're racing, broad daylight. They just go 80 mile an hour, and they have that ferocious, it's almost like an airplane, it sounds like, a small airplane or something.
Yeah, those are those cars those kids juice up to go faster, fast and furious, and do the street racing, but it's not necessarily the size of their engine, they just want their car loud, apparently, and most ordinances, they're going to allow those motorcycles, like Harley-Davidsons, that do make a lot of noise. But again, it lets you know that they're present. And I think it's kind of a macho thing for guys to have a loud motorcycle.
I think so, too, because I can't see. I mean, I can't hear him if I have my radio on a truck with a car. And I'm going along, minding my business. And then he's bit by me, 10 miles, 15 miles over the speed limit. I can't hear him. I mean, and sometimes you can't even see him because he's zigzag out of the lane. And then a month or two ago, on 25 northbound around Alameda in that curve from Broadway, and the guy was zipping us all along in between a two-row of cars right on the white line.
Well, here's the thing you've got that's kind of interesting. There are noise ordinances. There's nuisance ordinances. For instance, City and County Denver has one that's measured in decibels as far as how loud. They can apply to motor vehicles. Like I told you, the bike lobby says, and they have an argument in favor of the noise so they can be noticed and people can find them. The bike lobbyists have also argued that it's an expression of their First Amendment rights, which I don't get a lot as far as the argument, but they're also are like I said, noise limits for vehicles under 10,000 pounds. It's 82 decibels at 25 feet, and that's the problem. You can't get it enforced because police have other priorities. If you have a lot of noise, I think in a neighborhood at night, not just a bike riding through, but if you have regular noise, I think you can also get under the nuisance ordinance. You can do some things about it. What you end out with is a situation that, and the other thing is, I want you to remember, is a lot of times the police, and when they look at these bikes or the vehicle, they're going to look to see if it's an aftermarket product that's been put on the bike or on the vehicle versus something that came out in the manufacturing process. Because if somebody has intentionally souped up their vehicle to make it noisy, or if they've souped up their vehicle, for instance, we know you go up to Bandimere, you're going to have a loud all night long as you're watching the races,
sure,
because those cars have been modified to have that. Now, those cars being run in our streets, even without them speeding, probably would not pass the noise and the noise ordinances and the nuisance ordinances that we have. But it's a hard thing to enforce. The best thing I can tell you is, especially if you have it on a regular basis, as you said, going up and down Hamden on a regular basis, if you're close by, is call the police each time. And eventually, they're either going to tell you to quit calling, at which point then we can get involved in talking to them more, or they're going to stop the people and tell them their cars are too noisy.
I see. Well, very good. I'm just surprised that not too many people complain about that because they're all over every...
Yeah, they are all over, and that might be one of the reasons people don't complain is just because every time you turn your head, there's that noise. But at the same time, I'd rather have a loud motorcycle and know where they are at all times.
And if, oh, you think so, Val? I'm not
I don't know. That's just my opinion. I'm just speaking for myself.
You're entitled to it, but, you know.
On the other hand, they bother me. I like motorcyclists. I have a motorcycle myself. Well, I ride motorcycles, but I don't have a loud one. So, you know, some of those loud ones, they come up behind me and they give me a little shock there, and they stun me a little bit.
Yes. I just thought I mentioned it maybe on the radio. People listen, and I kind of thinking about it, and everybody starts complaining because I'm sure it bothers everybody. Summertime, windows open, that could be a half a mile away.
Can I agree, Steve. You have a good day, Steve.
Thank you very
Thanks for calling the Bell and Paul Legal Show. That's a good call. Take care. You're listening to the Bell and Paul Legal Show. We have lines open, 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. We're going to talk to Joe about a jury award. Joe, did you get a jury award, or what's going on?
No, there was a... Are you familiar with the one that just... happened down in Florida?
No, what happened down in Florida?
Down in West Palm Beach, Florida, this jury, there was a two-week trial. I think it ended on Friday the 27th of July, and the jury awarded $16.4 million to a guy that filed it against some court-appointed attorneys. Have you guys followed that at all?
No.
What I'm wondering is, what's the process to get the transcript to find out exactly? I guess it mirrors some stuff going on here, but there was the attorney that was sued, that lost, was named Brian O'Connell and then an Ashley something, and their law firm. Do you think they got a good chance of collecting on that? It's a big-time law firm, like maybe like a Holland and Hart. Well, not that big, but it's a very prominent law firm. Do you think the person that won will get the money, or do you think it'll get appealed, or how does all that work?
Is this the one with doing senior wrong in a guardianship situation?
Yeah, I think the senior's name was Bivens, and he had oil money, but he went down to Florida to his condo and got sick or fell or something, and they wouldn't let him come back to his house in Amarillo. So they staged a bunch of litigation against his son, who was the PR, and his son's daughter, or the sister, and they tried to get him home before he died. And they built the family like $1 million, and they sold all the property to their friends and stuff. He had property in New York, but anyway, they prevailed when they sued him. And I'm just wondering, because I've got a friend that's going through that, and they had a lawyer that told them that because this is like a precedent now that. They had the same thing in the city of Fresno, California, where they caught the public administrator actually, they videotaped him in there taking coins and stuff and out of an estate and then selling it on eBay, and they had to give the money back to the people. So now it's kind of, everybody said there's no recourse, but I'm just wondering if you guys hadn't heard about that case.
I'm looking at it right now.
This is interesting, though, but I hear what you're saying. Yeah. 16.4, and you're wondering if they can collect it from the law firm?
Yeah. Usually... I didn't see something about RICO in it, but it seems like it would probably have to be a RICO thing with the three times damages, right?
Well, yeah, if you're doing a RICO, absolutely. This doesn't, what I'm looking at, does not look like it's a RICO claim.
I don't believe so. I think it's more of a breach of fiduciary duty because
I guess the judge that prevailed... Not the judge during the jury trial, but the judge, I guess he's in all kinds of trouble now because he appointed his wife and guardian in a bunch of cases, and she had absconded with like $400,000 in one estate and all that.
Well, here's the question I've got. You know, on this verdict, I keep looking to see if any of it was punitive damages. or exemplary damages, because normally if you're going to get hit for that kind of action, some of that money is punitive or what we call exemplary damages, which makes a difference because you can't wipe that out in bankruptcy. Some of these other verdicts you can wipe out in bankruptcy.
Yeah, I guess that's my question, is what's the chances of the people actually collecting on this, or is it just a precedent so that, you know, do you think it's a precedent? Like an important case or not?
I think it's an important case. I think it's a great case. Can you hold with us over the break?
Sure.
Okay, hang on. You're listening to the Bell and Paul Lee Show. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back. We still got Bill, who has a child custody question, but we're going to finish off with Joe and discuss this matter when we get back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Paul Legal Show, 303-713-8255. We'll be right with you. First, we're going to talk to Eric for a minute and talk about Caitlin's. Eric, what's going on at Caitlin's?
We got all kinds of things going on over here at Caitlin's. We'll start off with our specials. Now, we're running these for one more week. These are our breakfast and lunch specials. Our breakfast special is going to be that biscuits and gravy special I talked about last week. We're doing 2 buttermilk biscuits. We're going to smother that with cream gravy. You get 2 eggs cooked any style. You can add ham, sausage, or bacon to that on the side. I suggest the bacon right away. We get a lot of reviews on that, little good reviews on that. That'll be the breakfast special for one more week. And our lunch special is going to be a Texas Club sandwich. Now, that's our take on a Monte Cristo sandwich. What we're going to do is we're going to take white bread. We're going to dip it in some egg batter. We're going to grill it to a golden brown. We're going to add Swiss cheese, cheddar cheese, Parmesan cheese. Naturally, our Hatch green chili is going to go on that. We're going to have ham and turkey, lettuce, tomatoes. That makes up our Texas Club sandwich. You can get our homemade chips or our waffle cut fries on the side for a little additional price on that. Really good lunch special to do one more week. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's all-you-can-eat. It's from 11 to 2. It's every Monday and Friday. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. So those are all kinds of things to come check out. And if that's not enough to draw you in, the mimosas are flowing at $12.50 a craft. The umbrellas are up. The TVs are on. The crew's here ready to serve you, ready to have a good time. Please come on down to Caitlin's and try us out if you haven't done it already.
I was there Friday with that buffet, Eric. It was fantastic. Really enjoyed it.
Fantastic. I'm glad to hear that. Get the word out for me, please.
Will do, Eric. Hey, where are you located?
We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's the Glendale Shopping Center, guys.
See you down there, Eric.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you. You're listening to the Bell and Paul Legal Show. We're going to stray right with the phones. We're going to talk to Joe about this jury award. Joe.
Yeah.
Hey, when I'm looking this up a little bit, breach of fiduciary duty judgments sometimes are and sometimes are not dischargeable in bankruptcy. They look at the judgment itself and find out what's going on. As I'm looking at this case, I have a question, and I think it's highly questionable whether or not a bankruptcy court would actually grant a discharge. That means that this judgment will live with these attorneys. Yes, they have an opportunity to appeal it. Yes, they would have to bond the judgment before they could appeal it. So they'd have to go in and say, you know, the bond is usually maybe 1.5 to 2 times the amount of the judgment. So they'd have to get a bond somewhere between $24 to $32 million before they could, they can still appeal, but while they're appealing, if they don't do the bond, then the people who got the judgment can start going against their assets and can start collecting on their assets. And if they appeal it with the bond, then yes, they can appeal it and withhold or hold off execution on the judgment. I think it sends a good, clear message. And I think it's an important message. I think it's important that the public trustees and the guardians and the people who are put in charge of other people's money have to understand that they have to account for the money. They have to handle it appropriately. That's not to say you're not going to, from time to time, have arguments between those who inherit, the beneficiaries of a will, or those who are entitled to inheritances, with the argument of the guardianship. But the reverse side is that nobody should be above this. So you're dealing with somebody else's money, and you should be dealing with it appropriately. And you darn well shouldn't be taking it and inappropriately spending it or running off with it.
I guess I don't understand the difference between the civil thing and the criminal. Like they're having a sentencing in Jefferson County on August 18th on a lawyer who stole an estate. But I don't know. I have a hard time because there's a website that's a AAAPG and a Dr. Sam Sugar, and he talks about the game plan. And it just seems like there's a half the time they're going in jail, like in the Las Vegas cases and stuff, which have some Colorado ties. The one guy, he was actually a partner with the judge at one time, Graham, Robert Graham and Judge Hoskins, and then he was married to Linda Graham, who was running a probate estate-type law office in Fort Collins and had a lot of connections in Colorado, in Denver, and the Jefferson County courts. But some of these they go to jail on, like in Las Vegas, the people are in jail, but then like this thing in Florida, these were court-appointed guardians that basically, you know, raped the estate, and it doesn't seem like they got jail time yet. Do you think that's coming now? Or
it could, you know, it just depends.
The reverse of OJ, where they go civil and then criminal, is that how it works? Or?
Not always. It's just a matter of whether the DA, the district attorney, thinks there's enough evidence to prevail in a criminal case, which is a higher standard and a more difficult burden to prevail than in a civil case.
Well, that's what we were talking about, too, is like one of the DAs out of Arapahoe County is running for governor now, but they said that the people that's working on all this stuff, that it's going to come back to bite him, that he never prosecuted during the Palmer, Tamara Palmer thing, that they actually covered it up, and they think that's going to come back to haunt him in his campaign. I don't know what your opinion on that is. But
I think that's going to be a big issue. I do. I'm trying to remember
it's kind of like the Boulder thing where they all have to retire or go out of, you know, out of the, they, it's just a prosecutor discretion, and he didn't think it was, that she was, you know, and then the judge Tim Fading, he just retired early and he was involved in all of it. And, it's interesting. I mean, the same thing in Jefferson County.
I'm trying to remember the case in Jefferson County. Cause I remember that the attorney, the judgment came in. He did have a trial. It just happened a couple of months ago. I remember that case.
Yeah, it was about a month ago. But I
can't remember his name, but he was.
I got his name. His grandma's name was Villano. I don't know if she was related to the former probate judge Villano or Holly Villano out of Small Domes. I don't know if that was any relation. I know she died, but.
Right. But. But here's what happens. And
his name was Greg Donaldson, I think.
I forget. I forget his name, but he, you know, I did follow that one a little bit and watch what happened. And here's the thing: let's say you're the victim and you've had this happen to you. There's a couple things you want to do right away, and the first thing is you want to go to the attorney general and the district attorney both, and identify that you think you've got this problem. The next thing you want to do is you want to get to a civil attorney, a private attorney, to see about a civil case. That we were talking about in the Florida case is where you're trying to get a judgment for money so you can get the money back, or you can try and get money from these people to compensate you for your losses. The criminal case is run by the attorney general or the district attorney or whatever special prosecutor might be appointed, and that attorney has to look at the question and decide whether or not they can prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. In a civil case, they only have to prove the case by preponderance of the evidence. So it's a little bit of a different standard, and the criminal attorney or the district attorney has to determine if they can prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. Can politics play a part in some of this without saying yes or no as to the specific cases? Yes, politics can play a part. What happens is I would expect the district attorney would convene a grand jury to determine whether or not the case should go forward, but because that, you know, you put the facts in front of a grand jury and decide whether or not there's a criminal case.
It looks like they're almost covering them, but it seems like the dominoes are falling. But in Colorado, I know a case where they went to the district attorney because the guy went to the lawyer. He said, oh, yeah, this is a case of forgery, and just go down to the district attorney. Well, then the district attorney waited and didn't do much, and then they went to the attorney general's and met with her, and then they actually met with her husband, and then it was just all covered up, and so now it seems like it might come back to bite them all because of the thing in Florida and the thing in Vegas. I don't know what your opinion on that is, but he's got documentation of everything that he's done. He went, you know, right away, he was sent there by the one attorney. They ended up being, had all his property. He got through the probate court and he just kind of played the game with them, and
Well, it's a hot topic. It's got to stay a hot topic. It's people like you who keep bringing it to the forefront that is a good thing, that it should be a hot topic, because that's one of the major areas of our business where we represent or people who no longer can handle their estates, and it's our job to make sure their estate is properly handled, and you have to have confidence in the courts to do that.
You don't think they're trying to cover it up, right, because there's so much money in it?
I don't think they're trying to cover it up right now. I think that if there was any kind of cover-up, it's come out. And we can talk more about different people who were involved at some point. We got to go right now. We got some other calls on the line. But I can tell you, Joe, that you know, my experience has been that if people like you continue to monitor this and make sure the justice is brought forward, it's not going to get covered up, and that's what we need to do.
Yeah, everybody needs to look up that AAAPG.net. That's a good website.
I appreciate it. We'll look it up and call me next week. We'll talk about it, okay?
Thanks,
Thank
Joe.
You. Thanks for calling the Bell and Polk Legal Show. We're going to stay right with the phones. We're going to go to Bill, who has a child custody question. Bill.
Yeah, I've got a friend that's got court-ordered child support, and now the mother of the child has signed guardianship over to her mother, who lives out of the country and has taken the child out of the country. Does he still need to pay child support to the mother?
He probably does have to pay child support. The question is what if it's a Colorado case, he should get into court right away with a modification to find out what's happened. If the child's been taken out of the country, has he lost his parenting?
Apparently, he didn't have any. You know, this is very on. This is just started recently, so he hasn't really had anything. But yeah, he's been denied visitation with the child.
Yeah, if he lost his parenting time with the child for being taken out of the country, he's got to do something about it. And he should file a motion immediately. And if, in fact, somebody else is exercising parenting over the child, child's no longer with the mother, has been removed from the country, and has a change in circumstances, he ought to get into court right away. Did he use a lawyer when the initial case came down?
No.
When they
send the paternity test, he just signed off as the father. He didn't even do the paternity test.
How old is this child?
About two.
I need him to. Can you leave your name and number and we contact you off the air?
Sure.
All right. Leave your name and number. We'll call you off the air, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. You're listening to the Bell and Polk Legal Show, 303-713-8255. We've got some lines open. When we come back, we're going to talk to Lori and to Erica. We appreciate your calls. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Polk Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Rob Brovich in studio today, talking to you about your questions. And like I said, a lot of times we're going to take your number and help you off the air, too, if you got some particular questions. I want to make sure you stick around to listen to the Larry and Barry Real Estate Show afterwards. These guys are great. They really know their real estate. If you have any questions about real estate, buying, selling, maintaining properties, whatever's going on, what's going on in the market today, listen to these guys and stay with them. Then you got Ken Moon that comes on after them. He's fantastic around the house. He talks about different things you can do and how to maintain your house. I listen to him just to be able to get pointers what might come up with my house. And then I continue listening because Larry and Barry come on for another hour. You can call in. You can talk to him. Make sure you stick with the radio shows on this station. You're going to love them. We're going to talk to Eric right now. Erica.
Hi.
How you doing, Erica?
I'm doing fine. Well, it could be better. I'm calling in reference to a situation. We purchased some hardwood flooring, and it was 51 boxes of it for over $3,100. Anyway, my husband saw the initial box. They were in random lengths like they're supposed to be. When we actually got the delivery, we paid for it, got the delivery approximately maybe 10 days later. Not the delivery, when he was able to pick it up about 10 days later. When the floor installers opened, like, the boxes, they saw it was mainly short pieces in the boxes and maybe just a couple of long pieces. And the matter of fact, they had to call the owner of the company, and he looked at it, too, and verified this was uninstallable because it was basically with the fact of, and then they had like burns and breaks on the boards and different things. And when I called the guy, the gentleman where we purchased it wood from, he answered the phone the first time, and then he said, I asked us to have the installers open up more boxes. He said maybe they're in different boxes or, you know, the other lunch. They did that, called back. Oh, before he said that, he said, if there's still a problem, call the number on the receipt. I called that particular number, and they said, we don't really deal with it. Jim was the person who's the contractor who deals with it. He deals with the hardwood flooring. Ever since then, I have not been able to get in contact with him.
Where are you located, in the Colorado Springs?
I'm in Colorado Springs, yeah.
Okay. Have you called up the district attorney out in Colorado Springs?
Well, actually, this is also the kicker. It was purchased in Aurora. It was a 720 number. I contacted them. When we found out, it was actually when my husband went there, found out it was actually at a distribution center, and the guy is actually based in Houston, Texas. We didn't know that because, like I said, it had a 720 number on the ad. And it was saying, you know, as far as the in the wood and everything. So we found that out, that the person is actually based in Houston, Texas. But it's at a distribution warehouse. The people there took the payment, gave us the receipt and everything for the purchase and everything. But like I said, I called them several times. They said they were going to try to help the warehouse manager. I mean, from my understanding, every time I call him, he said, let me call him. I haven't really got a really full answer. He said, let me check to see with his assistant to see if she received any information. But it's not going anywhere. He never gives me really any updates. All he says, he's going to check, and he's always in a meeting. He does answer his phone, but it's never any results when I do talk to him, so. That's why I'm actually calling today, because it's like we've been dealing with this for several days, and our project is basically halted because of that. And I have little kids, and this is really hard because the wood was torn up before they actually opened the boxes. So everything is kind of crazy in that house now.
Oh yeah, it's going to be a mess around your house for quite a while. You found is they're just not responding right now at all.
No, he doesn't answer. He finally, when I called the warehouse manager, I think he did talk to him once. He said, oh, did Jim contact you? The text message, all he did was send me a text message basically saying, oh, the wood is not defective and something. And I showed him pictures. He didn't even respond about the pictures and everything. And then I said something. I just said, oh, we wish to have a refund. And he hasn't responded ever since. And that was like maybe... only after, I believe, the warehouse manager did contact them one time.
How long has this been going on?
We purchased it on July 18th. It was actually picked up, I believe, on August 1st because of the place where we're living. I had tenants, they left. So it was picked up and delivered to our home on the 1st of August.
Okay.
So, around that time frame. That's the floor installers are the ones who made us aware there was a problem with the wood.
Okay, there's the Consumer Protection section of the Attorney General's office, okay? And okay. On Monday, I want you to call them. Now, I've got a number of 800-222-4444, okay? And that's the Consumer Protection section of the Colorado Attorney General's office. Both Arapahoe and El Paso counties have also consumer protection divisions, but I'm thinking you're probably going to want to talk to the Colorado in light of the fact we've got things going across county and even across state lines. It's pretty obvious to me that you've got somebody who is cheating you, and we need to first get the consumer protection services available in the different counties on your side or in the state of Colorado. Okay.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And I want you to call them about a consumer fraud or consumer problem. Okay. Now,
okay.
As far as getting your money back or getting the floor resolved, that's something we hope that the governmental services will do. But we're also going to have to, at this point, try and make contact with them, try and see about them returning your money or getting you the appropriate materials. We've got to find out who this company is and how we can hold them responsible, okay?
They're called Capital Funds LLC. They're based in actually Dover, Delaware, and the contractor is based in Houston, Texas.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on hold, get your number, and we're going to call you on Monday so we can get to the bottom of this and try and find this company, go through Secretary of State's office, find out if they're licensed to do business here, find out what we can find out for you, and then get you some help, okay?
I really appreciate it.
Okay, so stay on hold and give your name and number to Kevin, all right?
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're going to go to Beth right away. Beth, we got a few minutes or about a minute. What can we do for you?
Hi, I'm a director for a child care center in Gilpin County, and I recently had an inspection by state licensing, which we follow the rules and regulations of the state for child care centers, and I was cited with a violation that I am employing an individual who has been convicted of child abuse. The individual that is in question passed her CBI, her Colorado Bureau of Investigation background check, her fingerprint checks with the FBI. She qualified to be a family care provider. She also qualified to be a CNA, which you have to go through background checks for that as well. And what I found out was there was an icon that was sent to the state, which I guess is called an integrated.
Hey, Lori Beth, I'm sorry. That's the music. We got to be out. They put us out at 30 seconds faster than what you thought. Let me call you off the air on Monday, okay?
Okay.
And we'll go over it then. Hold on. Let us get your number and we'll call you, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. I am sorry we had to cut off Lori Beth a little early, but we'll get to the bottom of her question. Thank you for listening to our show. We come to you every week. Larry and Barry are right outside waiting to start theirs up, and you're going to enjoy that real estate show, so make sure you listen. And we'll be right back next week to take care of all your questions. See you next week.